Hi and welcome to the Homeopathy Health Show. I'm Atiq Ahmed Bhatti, a fourth generation homeopath with over 25 years of professional experience and practice in this field of healing. The Homeopathy Health Show is the online voice of homeopathy around the world, promoting and raising awareness of this truly unique system of healing, which is suitable for all ages, young and old. Every week, I invite guests from the world of homeopathy to come and share their experiences, their work, offer insights, and essentially talk all things homeopathy. Why not visit www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast button to listen to the latest episodes. So let's begin today's show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Hi everyone and welcome to episode 65 of the Homeopathy Health Podcast here on the UK Health Radio Network. This episode is part one of a two-part special with the amazing Jeremy Scher, who joins me all the way from Tanzania in Africa, where both Jeremy and Camilla Scher run Homeopathy for Health in Africa, serving the local communities through homeopathy and much, much more. Aside from this, Jeremy also runs the Dynamis School for Advanced Homeopathic Studies and frequently teaches around the world. Now, as mentioned, this is part two of a two-part special with Jeremy, and this episode, episode 65, is part one of our conversation, which indeed continues for part two in the next episode, which is episode 66, so do stay tuned for that as well. I'm thrilled to welcome Jeremy Scher to the Homeopathy Health Show today, and I've actually been wanting to speak to Jeremy for so long, but he's been so busy, and you will find out today why. There is some absolutely incredible work going on with Homeopathy for Health in Africa. And for those of you that are following my socials, you know that I keep promoting Homeopathy for Health in Africa. And the reason for that purely is because that's real homeopathic service to humanity. But I will let the master talk to you more about that, as Jeremy Scher and Camilla Scher actually founded Homeopathy for Health in Africa some 13 years ago now. But firstly, I have a very warm welcome to you, Jeremy Scher. Thank you so very much to join me all the way from Tanzania.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on your show. And I'm always so happy to have the opportunity to talk to lovers of homeopathy.
Oh, brilliant. We've got so many things to talk about. We're going to have such a lovely conversation. I know it. The first thing I would actually ask you, though, was we all know, a majority of homeopaths certainly know your work. They know about the Dynamis School. More and more people now are getting to know about the incredible work you're doing with Homeopathy for Health in Africa alongside your good wife, Camilla. But what was your journey? What actually got you interested in homeopathy itself? What was that first introduction as such?
Well, you see, when I was a young lad in the 60s, there was one thing I knew for sure, and that was that I don't want to be a doctor. That was my main decision, because my dad was a doctor, and I just always remember him going out at 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning, 6 in the morning, because in those days, that's what doctors did, you know, GPs. People would call and with a sick kid, and he'd be in the car and going out, and I'd hear him coming back half an hour later. So I said, okay, that's not for me, you know, I need my night's sleep. and I wasn't too fond of allopathy at the time, because my dad, you know, he was a doctor from the old school, and he was trained, you know, in South Africa, and his first job was in the bush in South Africa. So he would always be anti-medicine for people and just talk to them and everything else. But I was a bit miffed because he'd never give me antibiotics. And I used to get this tonsillitis often. 3 times a year, I'd get this really bad tonsillitis. And I'm like, Dad, you know, you give everybody else antibiotics. Why are you not giving me any? Mm. No, you're not giving me any. So I'd heard about homeopathy in England briefly, in the 70s, I was a hippie, and I was squatting in a flat in London, and we had the first health food shop in London. There were no health food shops and no Holland and Barrett, no nothing, no Neil's Yard, nothing. And we did this kind of goodwill health food, baking bread and muesli and stuff like that as a kind of charity. And then one night, somebody just mentioned homeopathy and it just stuck in my head, but I didn't know what to do with it. So then I'm back in Israel, walking down the road with this tonsillitis, and I saw a pharmacy that said they had homeopathic products. So, okay, I walk in, said, do they have something for tonsillitis? So they gave me a bottle, which had about 50 remedies inside. You know, I remember the list, and there was aurum and nitric acid and lycopodium and Hepasulf. So, okay, I try this thing. An hour later, I'm better. Like, okay, this is good. I was impressed, but that wasn't enough to sway me. But then I found somehow, I was in Jerusalem working there, and I went into a bookstore, and there was a book, Encyclopedia of Alternative Medicines. Now, in those days, there wasn't anything like that, you know. And today, you find a million in every shop, but then that was the first one I'd ever seen. So I'm like, great, I got that, and I take my motorcycle to drive to Tel Aviv, and in the middle of the road, I hit a taxi head-on and ended up in hospital for 4 months. So I have this book with me in hospital. So I read it cover to cover about 10 times. And honestly, the only thing out of those 300 alternative medicines that caught me was homeopathy again. I'm like, here's something that really makes sense. Mm. So by this time, I was excited. I waited for my bones to heal, and I was looking for a college. And there wasn't any college, not that I could find. Of course, you couldn't look on the internet then. So, you know, you had to go into libraries and see, is there anything? And is Israel, there's nothing. There was one well-known homeopath in Israel called Joseph Reeves, really old school, hyper-classical. But he wasn't teaching at the time. So then my sister in England found the College of Homeopathy, London. It was in its second year, 1979. So bang, off I went straight away. I came to London. And, you know, the college was 1 week and a month, which was disappointing to me. I was all ready to go. Mm. So they wouldn't give me a visa for that, for 1 week and a month. I had to do something else. So I went to the College of Acupuncture, East Grinstead. So I say to them, look, I want to do the acupuncture and the homeopathy together. The acupuncture is 4 days a week. Homeopathy is 1 week and a month. So they said, no, it's impossible. Nobody can do that. It's too much. I went to the homeopathy college to the interview. This was exactly, you know, like on the 8th of September, 1980. So how much is that? 43 years back. Mm. So they said to me, no, you can't do it. But I had no choice and I wanted to do it. So I did it. And I finished both colleges. I did pretty well in both. So, but from the beginning, it was homeopathy. There was a homeopath from the old generation called Robert Davidson. I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
Yes, many, many times.
He started all the colleges in England. You know, he had ambition and drive, you know. Mm. So before that, it was just night classes with Martin Miles or, you know, Misha Norland. And before that, Thomas Mohm and Grandemonte. That was homeopathy, small scale stuff. And then Robert started this college. And my first lecture was from Robert, and he was a great speaker. He totally blew my mind. 2 hours later, I was married to homeopathy for life, and it's been love at first sight, and it hasn't finished till today. So I went home, and I read Kent's lectures on philosophy cover to cover about five times, and that was it. So the acupuncture for me was interesting, but I wasn't in love. It was just, you know, but it was good because I learned, you know, Chinese medicine. Mm. Now, the thing is, homeopathy is wonderful, but it's got one thing that is missing, which is good and not good, and that there's no physiology. Homeopathy doesn't have a physiology. So, you know, you're talking about the disease, you're talking about the pathological process, you're talking in Western medical terms. There's a cirrhosis of the liver, you know, the arteries are blocked, you know, the pH is too high, too low. This is not our thing, really. We're using a philosophy that is not totally in harmony with homeopathy. Not that it's bad. It's all good stuff and correct, but it's not what homeopaths need. They need an energetic physiology. And Chinese medicine supplies that energetic physiology. It's like, you know, when you're talking the way that qi flows, the meridians, the yin and the yang, da-da-da, that is suitable for homeopathy and it works well together. So that was very useful for me. Now, when I finished both colleges, I wrote a dissertation called Homeopathy and Acupuncture. And I gave in the same one to both colleges. You know, little did they know, one I called Homeopathy and Acupuncture and the other Acupuncture and Homeopathy. That's the only thing I changed.
Ingenious.
Yeah. So, but there I saw, I understood that where the two of these meet is not in what points you use or what herbs you use or anything like that. It's in the higher philosophy. If you read the Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, which I'm sure you know, you'll see that it's a homeopathic philosophy book, maybe one of the greatest homeopathic philosophy books that I use all the time in my teaching because it's very profound and very homeopathic. So that was good for me, those two. And it was, in fact, Misha Nolan that started me on my teaching career. I think we were in the third month of school, and we used to go to his house on Saturday night for lessons, kind of just extra. And at the end of the lesson, I don't know what I must have been talking too much again and whatever. So he said, why don't you prepare a lecture for tomorrow? You know, I said, what? You know, I know nothing. He said, go ahead and give it a shot. So, okay. I went home. I sat up all night. I prepared a lecture on apis, which I didn't know. But in those days, no computer, no nothing. I took all the books. I had like 50 materia medicas open on my desk. I read them all. I put it together. I did a lecture. That was my first teaching. And that's it. You know, from then on, you know, I was teaching in most of the schools in the UK, and then I started teaching internationally. But I made a decision early on in the first year that it's a decision, the one important decision I've stuck to all through homeopathy. And I went to an evening class, and I had a case, I'd taken a case. I took this case for about 6 hours, was my first case, and then I worked on it for 2 weeks, and I could not come to a remedy. I thought, is this Pulsatilla or Ferrum? Ferrum or Pulsatilla? I could not come to a remedy. So I brought it to the class. At the end of the class, I read it out. And then to my shock, the teacher took out the pendulum and gave it a shake and said, give Pulsatilla. So I said, what the heck? You know, what is this about? You know, it was new to me. So then I went home. I thought, okay, you know, I can study homeopathy. I can get a pendulum. You know, what's it going to be here? And at that time, I made this decision. It was very useful for me because I decided I am going to do everything the long, hard way. I'm never going to take a shortcut. And that's what I've done. And that's why I attribute my success, whatever it is, in homeopathy, and to that decision, because if it's in provings, if it's in teaching philosophy, if it's in, you know, homeopathy for health in Africa, if it's and everything that I do, writing books, whatever in homeopathy, I do not take any shortcuts ever. I do it the long, proper, hard way, and that pays off. You know, Kent says, the best of the wine is saved for the last. And, you know, now I'm having some of that good wine. My prescribing is very, very, you know, quick but efficient and proper. Although I can work much faster today, it's not through shortcuts. I can work faster because I went about it the long way, sitting on cases for days on ends and working on them, you know, and studying remedies for days and everything else. Whereas you take a shortcut now, you're going to lose out in the future. You know, the difference between homeopathy and conventional medicine is homeopathy says aggravation first, amelioration later. And orthodox medicine says amelioration now, and don't worry about tomorrow because, you know, you'll be knocked out. So it's the same in studying homeopathy. You do the hard work now. You start hard. Doesn't matter if you're starting homeopathy at age 91. It's fine. You do it the right way. You do it the long way. You'll reap the fruits and the benefit. You take shortcuts, you won't. And unfortunately, so many people are looking for shortcuts in homeopathy today. You know, this system, that system, that system. How can I circumnavigate, make it easy, all that? Fine, anybody does what they want, but it's not for me. And since then, you know, I started teaching internationally in 84, and I've done a lot of things, more than I can remember, you know. Written books, done 45 provings, classical proper provings, taught the Dynamis School over 40 times. You know, it's a three-year postgrad program. Whatever. Research, I've done quite a bit of research. I just got the prize. I was very proud to get this year from the National Center for Homeopathy in the USA for Researcher of the Year.
Yes, and, I promoted that actually on one of my social reels.
Oh, thank you so much.
I did recently.
So, you know, and I do a lot of stuff. You know, I'm full-time at it, and I'm surprised because basically I'm lazy. And I, you know, I like being lazy, but I don't know how I managed to produce that much because I have the site now. It's a Patreon site, you know, where I collect all my articles and lectures and videos and that. There are literally hundreds and hundreds of videos, lectures, articles, stuff like that there. I think, you know, I still think I'm lazy, but I don't consider homeopathy work, so I'm lucky.
There's something you mentioned which is so, so important, which is that homeopaths, especially the younger generation who are just starting out, there is no need to take shortcuts because what that does is you may get quick results, but at the end of the day, it can become very confusing and one can become very lost. Whereas the nitty-gritty, the hard work, pulling your socks up, reading the books, going through Materia Medica, in fact, repertorizing manually. I know the software is there and it makes life very easy, but initially repertorizing physically, it's all about development, and homeopathy is very much about self-development as well as being obviously then capable of helping others. But if we're just a skeletal structure, literally with no meat and bones, then it can cause a great deal of problems later on. And it's not just grounding, it's everything that goes with homeopathy and learning and educating yourself and becoming wiser and then having wisdom and where applicable, you know, intuition or your gut feeling. And it all plays a part, doesn't it? Just to mold you to become better and more developed.
Totally. You know, it's upsetting for me to see the state that homeopathy has got into these days. Sometimes, you know, on one hand, lots of systems for shortcuts, which I have issues with. Not everything. I'm not knocking everything, but, you know, there are things that I think make it imprecise. On the other hand, lots of, you know, combination people and, you know, pathological prescribers and stuff like that. Everything has a room, but, you know, you need your, and I'm not totally knocking anybody out, but you need a strong center. And what you said, you know, the way you evolve as a person, I always like to say that, you know, to develop as a homeopath, you need to be potentized. And potentized means two things. It means succussion and dilution. So succussion is about sitting down with those books, reading, studying, repertorizing by hand at first, absolutely, you know, studying a remedy until you really understand what's going on, and doing the hard slog, you know. I mean, I must have read the Organon hundreds and hundreds of times, and, you know, and Kent's Materia Medica and other remedies like that. So that's a succussion. That's the hard slog, you know, bang, 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 bang. And then you do that long enough, and suddenly you get that dilution. And then that dilution, bang, you're in a higher potency of perceiving homeopathy. And you know, suddenly everything looks different. Your prescriptions will change. Anything will change. Everything will change. That can come from a good teacher who has to say just one word and you dilute it, or, you know, seeing a case or whatever it is, or something happening in your life, and you go up a potency. So when I see homeopaths, I think, you know, what potency are they in homeopathy? Are they 12C, 30C, 200? 10 mcm, and it's not the quantity of knowledge, it's just how much they've been succussed and diluted to a higher dynamization. So when I write, for instance, I've written four books on the noble gases. Now, this is one of the things I love, is the study of the noble gases as a kind of framework for the periodic table. And, you know, I've been working on that since 93, so that's 30 years I've been working on the noble gases. And it takes me 10 years to write each book on you know, helium, neon, argon, and krypton. Krypton's just at the publisher now. Now, when I wanted to first publish it, I went to a big homeopathic publisher. They said, no, nobody wants to read one book on one remedy. People want lots of remedies in one book. So I say, okay, well, find somebody else to do that. I'm not doing that. And you know, it's not a moneymaker to write one remedy in a book, but the book is divided into chapters that go like this. Mother tincture, 12C, 30, 200, 1M, 10mcm, mm. And each chapter represents a potentization of your understanding of the remedy. So you go from understanding helium on a physical level to understanding the higher spiritual aspects of helium in the helium MMM, and then you're really flying. But you have to climb up the rungs of the ladder. You can't just smoke a joint and go to MMM and think you're flying. It doesn't work that way, you see. Yeah.
I didn't expect you to say that, but that was quite funny. So, yeah, I'm fascinated by that, actually, and I think that's such a, it's almost profound, to be honest with you, that to be able to understand remedies, but to be able to go through a certain scale, which is all to do with development. One cannot be bombarded with information. Initially, I know you mentioned pulsatilla. Let's just use that. You know, initially pulsatilla is used very physically, and you look at a patient. But as you grow, as you develop within homeopathy, you understand the little nooks and crannies that where pulsatilla can really make that difference. And eventually, you can reach that stage where a person just needs to talk and say a few sentences, and you know it's pulsatilla through and through. But that doesn't happen in day one. That happens after, what, 20, 30 years maybe?
I'll tell you two interesting stories about pulsatilla. The first one was today, I just happened to be reading Kent's Lesser Writings. Kent's Lesser Writings is one of the best books in homeopathy. You know, really a fantastic book and worth reading again and again, and his aphorisms and all that kind of stuff. And I just opened a chapter there, and Kent liked to rant, you know. Hahnemann liked to rant. Kent liked to rant. And I follow their footsteps. I like to run too. So, you know, I have this whole series, webinar 7R, which is remedies, rules, restoring roots and runs and stuff like that. So Kent is on a rant here in this chapter, and he's saying, you know, he's ranting against that people think you should give pulsatility to blondes. He says, "You did any proving ever make a person blonde, you know, or pulsatilla?
Hmm.
No. So it's not from the provings." And he says, clinically, if you see 50 blonde pulsatillas, does that mean that the next brunette might not be a pulsatilla? You know, so he's on a rant about that. So that's just from today. It's fresh in my mind. But the other story in the 7-hour, you know, a webinar that I give, I'm trying to take them away from essences to start at the provings. So I said, okay, guys, I'm going to read you the proving of pulsatilla. So I read them the proving of pulsatilla: weepy, depressed, timid, mild, you know, indecisive, aggravation from fat, all that. I read it to them. So they, like, all these are professional homeopaths. They're like, okay, why are you telling us this? After I read it to them, you know, we know all this. I said, whoops, sorry, guys, I've just been reading out of the proving of Nux Vomica. All that weepy, timid, irresolution, etc., that sounds just like pulsatilla, is in Nux Vomica. And then I read them Nux Vomica, all the symptoms that look like pulsatilla. In pulsatilla, all the symptoms that look like Nux, irritable, you know, hardworking, blah, blah, blah. And which put the cat among the pigeons, and it's good. Because, you know, what these essences do, look, at the beginning, they're very convenient essences. Everybody wants a nice little essence to start off with because it makes life easy. So, you know, in the 80s, when essences kind of came in, it was like, oh my God, everybody was falling head over heels to get the essence book. And, you know, to get a quick little emotional fix on the remedy. And it was a good thing because, you know, it's difficult just to study a proving if you don't know what you're doing. For me, it's a joy, but if nobody's guided you, even reading Kent's Materia Medica, you're going to fall asleep after the first paragraph. But I promise you, if you look at Kent's from a different level, it's the most fascinating read because he's a genius, but you won't see it. So, but then these essences are nice and convenient to start out, just like playing with building blocks is good for a kindergarten kid. But when you go to a different level, they're going to hold you back because there's so much more to that remedy, and the deep configuration is much more than just a little astrology picture, you know, Scorpio, you're going to meet a black-haired man today, which homeopathy is kind of relegated to. It's brought down to that low potency. You do need guidance. Or a lot of hard work, because it took me a lot of hard work to learn to crack remedies in a different way. You know, but it's there. You can crack a remedy and you'll be blown over from what's in there, and I won't have touched the essence. So in fact, the way I train my students to crack a remedy and the case is never to start off with the emotional symptoms, because it'll be fine. You can play homeopathy with that, but you'll stay at the 30C, 200C. There's a way to go beyond that, and it's going into the world of mathematics, of secrets, of pattern perception, of computer coding, of DNA, of whatever. All logical, because when you study a remedy's physical generals, and you start to make the connections and you see, wow, that goes with that, that goes with that, that goes with that, that goes with that. Those two come together, those four come together, the whole thing comes together. Suddenly, you've got a pattern recognition of a remedy without ever looking at the emotional essence. Then you go to the mentals and you say, I get it. I see how that all works now. You know, it's a different approach. It takes work and time. But like, you know, and when I used to prepare a remedy for Dynamis, I'd sit on a remedy for 2 to 3 weeks trying to crack it. Now give me an hour, I'll crack it. you know, the basics of it. Take me another 2 days to make a PowerPoint, but, you know, to crack the basics of it, it's quick. That's the benefit of, you know, that thank God to see these things. And I'm sure you can see even deeper. I hope to get there one day.
Fascinating insight. You know, you've spoken about provings and remedies, and this was also part of Dynamis School, wasn't it? Because some of these provings, you established the school, you founded the school, should I say, Dynamis School for Advanced Homeopathic Studies in 1986. And it is from there that these provings came to be as well.
Yes. I'll tell you, look, the first proving was just a mistake. I'd come from Israel to study homeopathy. So I'm in the second year and I'm thinking, okay, you know, in Israel, I live on a farm. I live in the countryside, kind of. I have a piece of land. So people get stung by scorpions. It happens all the time, you know, and you know it's incredible pain and, you know, really terrible. So I think, oh, I look at the proving of scorpion. You know, I've got Lachesis, I've got tarantula, I've got that. I look, there's no scorpion. I say, well, that's weird, no scorpion. I mean, there were a few, but they're not even in the Materia Medica. You can't find them in those days. So, you know, small little old provings. So I said, okay, I'll go get a scorpion. So I went home. I bought a scorpion in a jar. His name was William. Okay. And he's studying homeopathy, and he's on the jar on my windowsill for 3 months. Not eating, not drinking, not moving, but alive. And then I learned the incredible resilience of scorpions, you know. There he goes into hibernation, but he's still alive. Anyway, in the end, I had to get another scorpion because we didn't have an identification on William. So I got a scorpion, we made the remedy, and I just gave it to some classmates in the second year. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea. And then I said, just write something, what happens, and send it back to me, give it back to me after a month. So they did that. And fortunately, it's such a strong proving that something came out. But then, you know, and then I thought, okay, I've done my job in homeopathy. That's it. But in 1990, it suddenly dawned on me, hey, you know, you can do another proving. So, okay, cool. So I did two provings at once. So I wanted to be, you know, efficient. So I did hydrogen. I thought I'll take one cosmic thing and one man-made thing. So I did hydrogen and chocolate in the same class. Anyway, not a good idea to do two together. But I learned a lot of things from that second proving and how to do it properly. And then I refined it. Then I wrote my first book, which is a Dynamis and Methodology of Provings. But since then, I've done, 45 provings, and they're all done to the highest possible quality that I can achieve. Meaning, you know, we work on that proving for years to get it exactly right, everything in place, every timestamp, you know, every symptom where it belongs, you know, introductory, everything. With supervision, the whole lot. And the last proving I did, which was 2 years ago, and that was it. I got so trashed from that proving that I decided I don't know if I'll do another proving. You know, because personally, I ended up in hospital again on that proving.
Ooh.
But don't think that happens a lot. If you ask me if I'd go back on any of the provings, no. I've gained all my knowledge and wisdom, what I have, the little bit I have, is from provings, because and all my personal development, they're the most amazing things. They take you out of your comfort zone, but they're going to take you into a place when you learn about yourself, nature, and the universe and homeopathy, like nothing else can teach you. So I don't regret it, but after 45, you know, and the last one was the Nobel gas number 6, which is radon, which is a pretty intense substance, very cancerous, very quick half-life. And that put me into hospital for a night, which I did not like. You know, we tend to say, Camilla and myself, we have a scar from every proving. But it's like a battle scar. It's a scar you're proud of. You've learned something. You've gained something. You've been potentized. It's the most wonderful thing, Pluvius. Yeah.
What happened then? What was it that radon did to you?
I took the proving kind of in April, and I went to Israel, and then I started getting kind of symptoms like terrible stomach pains, and I didn't know what it was. So I thought to myself, you know, maybe it's a heart attack, maybe it's a stomach ulcer, maybe it's liver, maybe it's gallbladder, I didn't know. And I was in terrible pain and vomiting, and, you know, I went to hospital, and they couldn't find anything, and I kept getting these attacks. I was up all night in terrible pain. Now, here's a nice little ending to the story. The characteristic symptom that I had was vomiting a long time after eating. Usually, you'll vomit 5 minutes after, 2 hours later. I was vomiting 6 hours after, which is not common.
Mm.
I look in the repertories, in the complete, I look in the synthesis. Nada, you know, of interest. I tried the remedies anyway. I'm still getting the thing, and I'm in bad pain. So I'm looking for a remedy, and that's the main characteristic symptom. And then 2 months later, I looked in another repertory that's called the reliable repertory. It's just being developed now. It's kind of more new. It's from Synergy McRepertory. And I looked in that symptom, and bang, they had vomiting long time after eating, Ferumfos. So I took the Ferumfos, I'm better. So it's just a lesson, you know, how important our repertories are, the accuracy, adding clinical symptoms. Like I have an Excel sheet that every clinical symptom I see that is well-proved and, you know, I can confirm it for sure, I'll add it and I'll send it into the repertory people. You know, so it was just, homeopathy has to be precise as possible, but it's not easy, but we try.
It just goes to show, though, that the provings themselves, that it shows you the power of homeopathy, of the remedies.
Well, you know, Kent says if our remedies weren't powerful enough to kill people, they wouldn't be powerful enough to heal people.
Mm.
They're powerful. And I've seen, you know, I mean, I've been knocked out by provings. But partly, look, when you do a proving is like a mini epidemic. So a proving is much more powerful than you just taking a remedy at home. You might take the radon at home, and it's not so much. But when you've got 40 people taking it together with all the intention, it's like a tsunami.
Mm.
It hits you right over. And because the power of the collective is like the power of epidemic. It's the same thing exactly, and it gets amplified by this group of people taking it together with the intention of doing a good proving. So it's much more powerful than just taking a remedy. It's strong.
I think that's so important what you've just said, because the homeopaths certainly listening to this show will probably think, well, you know, I've taken radon in the past, or I've prescribed it to a patient for whatever reason, and it hasn't brought on. Well, it certainly wouldn't if the symptoms match, of course. But this whole thing about intention and the collective is so, so important, because it's all frequency, isn't it? And if you're resonating at that, you know, same frequency as close as you can, it's going to be huge.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing about epidemics. Look, I just, you know, I did a huge amount of work during COVID, because epidemics is one of my specialities in homeopathy. I've studied it for years, you know, the philosophy and all that. So when COVID came, I was leading a very big group of excellent homeopaths from all over the world. And we were working on it together every week. And, you know, it's a much more powerful thing than individual disease. And it requires, you know, higher level of understanding and application than treating individual disease. It's a different ballgame. And provings and epidemics are like brother and sister. So you've got to do them together. There's not really much difference between them. Not in the collective factor, and not in the way you crack an epidemic. It's just like you do a proving. It's the same principle. So whenever I'm teaching in Dynamis, I wait for the third year to do the proving and teach epidemics at the same time. Because they are exactly, they mirror itself exactly. But there's another thing here. You see, if you take a group of volunteers from Venezuela and you say, I'm going to give you $10 each to do this proving, and you'll never get a great proving out of them. Because not only because they don't know homeopathy, because they're all separate, they're all separated. There's nothing to hold them together. If I do a proving in the first year, it wouldn't be as powerful as in the third year. Because during the first 3 years, this group comes together. They're eating, drinking, studying, loving homeopathy, whatever they do, and they form a collective vital force. They form the collective vital force of the group. Now, when you put a remedy, a proving remedy into that mix, it's like explosive, because you've already got that collective vital force, that one intention, and the proving is much more powerful than just collecting random people. And I've done it with random people, and it'll never be the same level, you know. So, which is why, you know, all my provings, they are elaborate, I think.
Would you say, though, having said that, that type of dynamic can also be the same for the doctor, the homeopath-patient relationship, even though the homeopath is the prescriber here? But because there is this element of trust and this, of course, for a homeopath, the desire to heal, to cure a condition, and during the consultation, the patient becoming receptive to that idea, does that same, you know, scenario, that energy level exist there as well, would you say?
I'll tell you something. When I take a new patient, I ask them to fill up a form. It's a pretty full form. And I'll tell you that 20 years ago, I was very much against forms. I said, you know, you've got to be there, you've got to get the information fresh and all that stuff. Then I changed my mind, and I give a form, but it's open-ended. It's not saying no, yes, no questions. But they fill this form, and then I always sit on it the night before, and I work on it for half an hour. I'm working on this case, marking out all the symptoms, what's mental, what's physical, what's general, what's whatever, repertorizing, doing the whole thing, and coming to a remedy or two that is possible. And I know nearly every time that when I sit and talk to that patient, it will be a different remedy. I know that the remedy I come up with the night before will not be the remedy, even though I try my best. I've seldom seen it be the same. I have that interaction with the patient, and I'm talking to them, and I can ask questions, and they come up with stuff they didn't say before, or they say it in a different way, and I can think about it. Then I'll come up with something else. The thing is, I do the form and the work to prep myself. So I've like been there once. I'm not taking a totally new case that, you know, by the time I ask them if they had chickenpox when they were a kid, you know, I'm wasting energy. So, you know, now I can ask them, really go deeper. What do you mean you have a fear of heights? When do you get it? Why do you get it? What happened? What was that dream? Tell me again, you know? So as you say, it's that human interaction that brings it to a different place.
Fascinating indeed. Well, there's so much to talk about still. We have to move to Dynamis School. I want to ask you how that's going, and it's been extremely successful, has it not? And there's a lot going on. I mean, do you still actually find time to, are you still teaching there? Are you going back and forth?
Well, I taught Dynamis since 86, so, and there were times when I did up to 5 Dynamises at once. I mean, in which I don't know how I did that. In 95, I was doing Holland, Norway, California, England, and Israel at once.
Wow.
And, you know, just having to remember what jokes you told in every class is not easy. So, you know, it's like, and I did 5 provings that year together. But, you know, I love teaching Dynamis. And the reason I love it is because there's a continuity. So it's not that I'm going to a conference and, you know, for 1 hour, and saying, look what I did, look at this great case I had, whatever, blah, blah, which I don't enjoy. You know, it's just like going to the market and saying, you know, look at my shirt. I like to take people and potentize them from whatever level they are, higher, 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 both in philosophy, materia medica cases, and personally. So it's been a joy for me. And the last three dynamicists I did were Israel, Japan, and Ireland. Now, it's supposed to be a three-year course, and none of these classes agreed to finish after 3 years. They all insisted. So Israel went on for 7 years, Japan for 4 or 5 years, and Ireland also for over 4 years. And they would all continue, but I got, you know, first of all, flying has become much more tiresome than it used to be. I don't want to fly that much anymore, you know, with all this COVID and blah, blah, and everything else. Second, you know, I don't like this. I don't like teaching in the Zoom that much either, unfortunately, because just, you know, talking on Zoom for 2 hours is okay. Talking for 4 days, it knocks me out. So, but in 2013, I decided, you know, I don't want this, all this dynamics information to get lost, because there's a lot of good stuff in there. And if I croak, or when I croak, then, you know, I don't want it just to vanish. So I asked Manny Norlin to record the dynamics I did at the time at, you know, at his place. And he recorded it and did a lot of wonderful work on it. And this took 10 years. And now it's finally ready. And it's been highly edited, you know, a lot thanks to Manny, into a course that is, you know, bit-sized, got all the information, got a wonderful book to go with it, you know, all the written material, short videos on all the subjects. And I plan to add a lot of stuff and to make it even better than it was before. And that's very exciting for me, because also, you know, I've always had people saying, come to Australia, come to California, come to Argentina, but I can't do all those things together. So the fact that people can do it at home, and then we're going to have a live session every month to catch up and to, you know, answer questions, and I'm putting all kinds of goodies in, this will be great. And for me, you know, dynamics used to be my most advanced thing, but I have much further things to talk about now. I've gone beyond. And if I did a dynamics from the beginning, it would now be 7 years of teaching, but then nobody would come. But if you say to people 3 years, they can just about do it. If you say 7 years, they like to get lost. You know, I'm not doing 7 years now. So I want to have dynamics as a basic structure and then add on to it a lot of stuff. So we're working hard on making this the best possible course. And, you know, we're going to launch in January, February, and I'm really excited about this.
I'm very interested to note that Manny is involved, because Manny is a very good friend, and he's one of a kind, I tell you. He's amazing generosity, extremely committed to homeopathy, exemplary as far as help is concerned. I can't sing his praises enough, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, I was very good friends with Misha. And I remember Manny when he was like a toddler. So I've known him all his life. And then, you know, I taught at his place many times. And you know, he's a great guy, and he did wonderful work on the course. And I'm very grateful to him.
And that was part one of a two-part special with Jeremy Scher. Part two is out next week on episode 66 of the Homeopathy Health Podcast. What a wonderful conversation indeed, and I cannot wait to share what we talk about next week. It's really inspiring, really, really fascinating. I'll talk to you very, very soon. I do hope you've enjoyed this week's episode of the Homeopathy Health Show. Please do support the show by clicking follow on my socials. Remember, the more exposure the podcast receives, the better for homeopathy around the world. You can find me on Instagram by searching for @like_treatslike. and on both Facebook and TikTok by searching for @LikeTreatsLike. So let's promote the voice of homeopathy on radio and podcast around the world together. Don't forget to visit me online at www.liketreatslike.co.uk and click on the radio and podcast tab. Here you'll be able to see all the guests that have joined me on the show so far. And of course, you can stream on demand the latest episode to your mobile, tablet or PC. Until next time, stay safe and take care.